A routine military exercise turns into a nightmare in the Scottish wilderness. This week on Discount Film Critics, we discuss the 2002 horror film Dog Soldiers, starring Sean Pertwee, Kevin McKidd, Emma Cleesby, and Liam Cunningham. Directed by Neil Marshall. Runtime, 1 hour, 45 minutes. The sergeant's like, just go, go, go. And he's like, no, 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 we're going to get you out of here. I would have been like, I'm sorry, fella, but your kidneys are on the outside. I don't think you're going to make it. Welcome to Discount Film Critics. I'm Ray.
And this is Ryan.
All right. And today we are talking about the 2002 horror film Dog Soldiers. Ryan, could you tell us, just give us a quick overview, what is Dog Soldiers about?
Well, it's a training mission for Scotland military or a small group of soldiers that's out in the wilderness. They think they're on a training mission. It turns out to be a little bit more than that, with
supernatural
and experiments gone wrong kind of thing.
Yeah. I got to say off the bat, I like Dog Soldiers. I saw it like around the time it came out, but I think I saw it on video. I mean, it didn't release in theaters. It's pretty small and it's a pretty low budget film. And Ryan, I don't know if you remember, but remember last week when we talked about Wasteland Warriors? And I said, like, oh, this movie reminds me a lot of Doomsday. Remember that? I talked about that movie, Doomsday. Well, yeah. Doomsday was directed by the director of Dog Soldiers, Neil Marshall. I didn't realize it. I was like, oh, it's the same guy. But yeah, I really like it. It definitely is low budget. But I think in this case, I think the budget constraints help the film. Whereas a lot of these movies that we watch, the budget constraints, I mean, it really shows that it's kind of a hindrance in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
but I think the fact that they didn't have money and probably didn't have a lot of time, I think actually helped. To me, and again, I think this film, it's almost, I don't want to say a copy of, but it is, you could tell it is heavily influenced by James Cameron's Aliens. And I think one of the ways that really like stood out to me was not showing the enemies. You know what I mean? Like in Aliens, of course, it's the xenomorphs and spoilers and Dog Soldiers. It's like you said, it's British. I'm sorry, I'm British. Scottish soldiers up against a family of werewolves. And
I think for a 22-year-old movie we need the spoiler alert.
Yeah, sorry, if you've not seen it then you're out of luck. Yeah, but absolutely. It's like, you know, you see just kind of quick glimpses of the werewolves and it's quick edits and things like that. I think that helps. And same thing with Aliens. You didn't see, they only had like for that whole production, they only had like 3 alien suits, something crazy like that. But the way they edited it together and did the camera work, it looks like there's way more than what there actually was. And that's a great example for all you young aspiring filmmakers out there of like, just a little bit can go a long way. You know, if you're creative, you can make it work and make it work better than, you know, had they in 2002, had they just been like, oh, let's throw all this CG at it and stuff like, you know, it would have looked like garbage.
I think there's probably countless examples, but like the one that springs to mind for me is Jaws. Like you think your limitations you have, whether it's the budget or just having effects that maybe don't work when you want them to, and you figure out a workaround to maximize what you can get out of it.
Yeah, well, you're right on, Ryan, because Jaws is a great example, because that shark didn't work. That shark didn't work hardly at all, and like Spielberg says, it worked just enough to get by, And yeah, I mean, I think I mean, you see a lot of movies now with that are just filled with CG, and you see everything all the time. You see, you know, and it's just like, once you show something too much, and especially if it's supposed to be like a fantastical supernatural creature, you show it enough times, it gets boring. Like, you're like, oh, it's that thing again. But if it's like in the darkness, in shadows, quick edits, your brain fills in the rest of the information, and it's usually way better than whatever they can, you know, throw up there via CG. And I think, yeah, I think that works. Definitely works in Dog Soldiers. The other thing that I think is really important about Dog Soldiers is, I mean, the movie kind of hinges on the lead character, and it's Kevin McKidd from, I think people in the States know him most from Grey's Anatomy. He was a longtime cast member on Grey's Anatomy, but he was the first time I saw him was in Trainspotting, and he is the lead in this movie. And I think he's incredibly charismatic, and it's a good example of like what a charismatic lead can do for your film. It can really elevate it, even if it's a low budget movie that is pretty basic. There's not much to the story, but again, with the director, with his kind of visual flair and a charismatic lead and some clever dialogue, it could really elevate it above, right? Yeah. Better than it has. Like, I think this movie is one of those movies that is like, it's better. And you might feel differently, but I'm just saying for myself. It's a better movie than it has any right to be.
I agree. Yeah.
Classify it. But yeah, I thought Kevin McKidd. So, you know, we start off and it's, you don't really know what's going on. He's running through the woods and he's being chased by something, and you're thinking, oh, it's Dog Soldiers. So maybe he's being chased by a werewolf. And it turns out that's not the case. It's really a training exercise for a special forces unit. And they catch him, and they're like, hey, you evaded capture for like 27 hours. Like, you're at the top of the class. And then our lead villain, who was also, again, a pretty charismatic villain. And he was one of the leads on Game of Thrones. What's the actor's name? But he was Liam Cunningham. Yeah, he was on Game of Thrones. But he's kind of the main human villain in all this.
Yeah, boy, what a villain is he? He is.
Yeah, well,
he's not going to win a lot of points when your first move is to make the lead hero to kill a dog.
Ryan, don't you find it so funny? Well, not funny, but interesting that, like, if he handed him the gun and told him to shoot one of the other soldiers, you would have been like, huh, okay. But the fact that it's a dog is like, you're like, no. Right. And in a good example of like kind of setting up a character through the actual story. So he hands him the gun, tells him to shoot the dog. What does he do?
He refuses.
Yeah. So then, you know, we establish like, oh, here's a guy that, like, you know, he's definitely got a moral code that he follows. Definitely an independent thinker, makes his own decisions. So yeah, I mean, you establish that right away. And just in the first like 3 minutes of the movie, again, really great.
You wonder what's funny is, so it goes, it's the scene ends and Amazon immediately cuts to a dog supplement commercial.
Oh my God.
I think that commercial kit popped up again later on the show, but I thought that was so funny. I had to stop myself for a little bit and get the laughter out.
Yeah. So
no amount of supplements is gonna stop that bullet.
Yeah, that wouldn't have happened if he had his dog that expensive dog food. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's through that short scene, you learn a lot about the lead and you learn a lot about the protagonist. I mean, the antagonist.
Yeah.
So, I mean, again, I think that's, I mean, one thing that I'm realizing I don't want to be negative on other people's movies, but there was a really high profile Netflix science fiction movie that came out, and it just had voiceover, and you could tell like, oh, they got this complex story they're trying to tell, so they're doing it with voiceover and all this, and it's like it's just death for the audience. You have to tell your story. You have to give all the information about the characters through the action on the screen organically. I feel like Star Wars, like A New Hope. They don't sit there and do voiceover and text. Well, they do text at the beginning, but you know, it's all just, you know, natural. And it's a crazy, fantastic story that people have never heard of before, but you get to the end and you understand what's going on.
Audience some credit and let them put the pieces together, because they can, they will.
Yeah. And I think when you have something, and I think this is important for like aspiring filmmakers out there, even if you don't have a lot of money, and even if you have kind of a crummy script, like with your flair for storytelling, like you can really make a cool movie. So then we kind of get into the actual meat of the film, and we start off with he's kind of been, I guess he's been kicked out of the running to join that special forces unit, and now he's back with his regular unit, and they're just doing a kind of a routine exercise where they got to go from point A to point B. And you kind of get introduced to the other soldiers in his unit. And one thing that I noticed off the bat is the beginning, they show them being dropped off in the forest with a helicopter. Mm-hmm. And it's just something that's like, it's kind of a throwaway thing, but I don't know about you, but I was like, damn, like that helicopter could hit one of those trees.
I was thinking, the first thought in my mind was, there's no way that thing's landing on that ground, because it wasn't anywhere near level or even clear for them to land. But it does a pretty good job of dropping the characters off, and I think like there's a little bit for each of them to say, so you can pick up who's who. There's the guy who's really interested in the soccer match, the football game that's on, and there's the guy who forgot his watch, and you easily recognize, Private Cooper. Is it Cooper that I think that?
Cooper.
Yeah, Private is Cooper is the guy from the Special Forces training.
And you get a sense of like camaraderie between the like they kind of know each other, you know, because they're all kind of like breaking each other's balls, and like even the
that it's training because they've got the yellow barrels on the guns. So
again, that's a really great, I think that is a great way to build tension, because we should back up a little bit. As I forgot about this scene, there's a scene at the very beginning where there's a couple camping in the woods and they get torn apart by werewolves. So having that little, yes, they're on a training exercise, but the fact that their guns are have caps on them, they only have flashbang grenades. They don't have like frag grenades. So all of a sudden you're like, it's not a secret. You know, these guys are going to run up against werewolves and they don't have weapons. So that adds some tension right there. Again, like a really great way to like kind of ramp up the tension. I thought it was I don't know if they did it on purpose or it just, that's the way it played out. But I was like, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty good.
One of them has a rabbit's foot, so you know some luck is hopefully gonna
come their way. I think, was it Cooper that had the rabbit's foot? I don't remember.
Yeah, I think so.
So then they start their exercise, and they come across Ryan, who was the guy from the beginning, the villain, the special forces villain from the beginning. And his camp has been completely, he's wounded badly And it's important to state like the severity of his wounds. He's pretty much like ripped open. And he's like delirious. He's saying like, there was only supposed to be one. And you just like, what the heck's going on? But, and again, this is where another thing I appreciated about Dog Soldiers. There's some things I didn't understand about it that I will get into. But one thing I really liked about it was the characters were pretty smart. Like they did smart things that like you would think like, oh, I would do this. Like, so immediately they understand like, okay, there's something going on. They don't quite they don't understand that it's werewolves, but they immediately drop their guns and they pick up the weapons that are in the camp from the special forces guys. Cause they know that like, these are actual weapons. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Which I guess maybe it's worth mentioning. They're kind of expecting to find something because they've got a campfire and they're trading stories and all of a sudden it's a cow or something. A carcass gets dropped onto their fire. And I think one of them points out like there's teeth marks and they say it's natural causes. which I guess, you know, technically is right. And so that puts them on edge. They go looking for whatever might be out there and come across Ryan with the special forces.
The special forces leader. That whole part, the beginning part with the carcass, it reminded me a little bit of Predator, like that whole build up and then they come across like the decimated camp. You could really tell that the director and the writer were really heavily influenced by, I mean, of course, I mean, if they're like on our age, you know, Predator and Aliens.
Oh, yeah.
And there's even some of the dialogue. There's even some references to Aliens in the dialogue.
One of the things I liked is when they like see a little bit tuft of hair or something on the log when they're searching and they see like some blood splatter. And I just like the idea of a werewolf needing to take a break and sit down on the log while he's terrorizing any humans at night.
Take a little rest, you know?
Yeah.
They're not going anywhere. So yeah, they come across the camp. They come across Ryan. And they all of a sudden understand, like, they don't quite understand what's happened yet, but they arm up, right? Yeah. They're fully armed. And then all of a sudden, just like they kind of just, they're just kind of walking through the woods and just all of a sudden, like, all hell breaks loose. Like, they get attacked by the werewolves. And this is an interesting thing. And then we see that they're werewolves. And I think they see that they're werewolves too. But let me ask you this, Ryan. I'm asking Ryan this. What do you think? Like, if let's just say, Ryan, we're in the park. We go to the movie theater, and we're in the parking structure, and all of a sudden we see a creature, 8 feet tall, standing upright, full of fur, huge teeth, has the head of a wolf. Would you be able to come to terms with the fact that this is a werewolf? Like, how, if you experience something like this or something like they experienced, how long would it take you to come to terms for you to admit to yourself, this is a werewolf?
Yeah, that's a good question. I feel like it things would be happening so quickly that I don't know that why my brain would be able to stop and consider anything until I feel like I'm in some kind of safe area.
Oh my! Like, I don't know that I would ever, because I think my brain would just be like, it can't be. Like, it's just impossible. I don't think I could come to terms. They come to terms with it, but it takes a little while. But like, I don't think I could. I would be like, okay, it's a person in a suit. You're like, okay, it's clearly not a person in a suit. Well, it's a bear with mange or something. You know, like, I would be like, there is no way that would enter into my mind. Yeah. Like, and the same thing.
I imagine, like, as a soldier, you kind of go, because it's going back to Predator, right? Where he's like, if it bleeds, we can kill it.
Yeah.
And you're going into the idea of this is a werewolf, then there's some rules that might apply that make that not so easy.
Yeah. Well, don't they kind of establish that, like, the rules don't apply? Or maybe they do. We'll get to that later. But yeah. But it's really interesting, because I was thinking about, like, I kind of started to go on a little spiral about, like, well, like, what would it, if it was a vampire? Like, would I finally accept that I'm dealing with a vampire? But it's interesting. Like, werewolves, even vampires, almost every culture on Earth has some sort of story. You know, even going back hundreds and thousands of years, about some kind of a creature that transforms from a human to an animal. It's interesting. Look, I'm not saying werewolves are real, but I mean, it's just interesting that across all these different cultures, there's similar kinds of mythological creatures. And I mean, I think that's why these stories still resonate with us.
Maybe that's to some degree why, like, zombies are so universally, like, they have a pretty wide audience, right? And it's come, maybe it comes from the idea of, like, the afterlife not being death not being an end, but
yeah,
there being something further. And
yeah, I think also zombies are a great blank slate for, you could project anything you want onto a zombie, like consumerism, you know, Danny Boyle, you know, rage and anger in society. Mm-hmm. Zombies are really good for that sort of thing. They're great, you know, analogies for different things in horror movies.
That's true.
Yeah, I was just thinking about it, like, vampires, werewolves, and dragons. You can find examples of those across a wide swath of cultures going back hundreds of years. Yeah. A really interesting thing to, like, study. If I could go back to college, maybe I would study the mythology.
There's still time.
We'll see. So they get into their first fight with the werewolves, and I think they're doing the right thing. They're shooting their guns. The werewolves are taking hits. They're running. One of their guys gets impaled by a tree.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of cool, in that, like, the first guy doesn't get killed by a werewolf. He kills himself on accident.
Yeah, and maybe that kind of goes back to what you were asking, you know, you're getting a situation you weren't expecting and don't know how to handle. And it's easy to make mistakes and
panic,
like run into a tree.
Well, and then I thought to myself, could you run into a tree fast enough? I mean, you'd have to be running really fast, and it would have to be a really sharp branch to, like, I mean, he ran himself through.
Yeah.
It was pretty,
I'm going to take a wild guess and say, if I ran into a werewolf, I, even at my size, could get up enough speed to run into a branch all the way through my torso. Like, that would, that would not surprise me.
Yeah. Yep. And then, they have that first encounter. They lose a guy. And then the sergeant, yeah, let me see his name.
He gets it.
Yeah, Wells is his name. And he was in Doomsday. He was one of the dudes in the main guys in Neil Marshall's other film, Doomsday. Sean Pertwee, I think his name is. He gets eviscerated. And I think this was another thing that I think separated this movie. And I don't know, I imagine this would be kind of more maybe realistic. He gets split open, his intestines fall out,
yeah,
but he's still alive. And not only is he still alive, but he says, oh my God, he goes, my guts are on the outside. I mean, I shouldn't laugh.
Very, very astute.
But Cooper comes running over and he goes, "We're just going to have to put him back in." And he starts stuffing his intestines back in the cavity. And he goes, they're not going to fit. He goes, "Yeah, they are." And then, I mean, but like, that's, I mean, to me, that I mean, from what I've, again, I you know, I've seen a few war movies and, you know, some documentaries and stuff like that. But, you know, we see a lot of movies where people get shot and they just, they close their eyes and fall over. But that's really not the reality of taking some of those kinds of wounds. You know, like you see Saving Private Ryan, you see people with terrible injuries that are still alive. You know, I yeah, think that sure. that could be more on, you know, that could be something that could happen.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's easy to think like, oh, it's kind of over the top. And yeah, it probably is. But yeah, I remember that's the movie that came to mind when I saw it, because they had similar instances where with soldiers on the beach and this Dog Soldiers is a movie where it's hard to describe, because like you sit there and watch them try to push his guts back into his body and think, come on, that's not going to work. But as the story unfolds, like you kind of accept like, oh yeah, I guess that, you know, considering the story they're telling. Yeah.
Yep. It fits in.
It worked out okay for him.
And, well, not and really the characters are acting consistent with the way they're set up, right? Like, you know, like Cooper, the kind of person he is, like the sergeant's like, just go. And he's like, no, we're going to get you out of here. You know, I would have been like, I'm sorry, fella, but your kidneys are on the outside. I don't think you're going to make it. You know, and I'm like, yeah, hold them off. Like, no, he's like, yeah, let's go. You know, it's patch him back up. And then, and I'm sure, like, you know, I'd be interested to hear what, like, somebody that trained as like an army medic, like, is this, you know, how realistic is this scenario? I bet you'd be surprised. But yeah, so they stuff his intestines back into his body cavity and they get him up and they're fleeing. And at the last moment, a Range Rover comes tearing down this dirt path. And it's a young woman who tells him like, get in. And they pile into this Range Rover and she drives him off to a cottage where she's staying. And then it becomes, you know, we kind of switch from being Predator to being, it turns into like Assault on Precinct 13. Where it's a standoff movie. A group of people hold up in an area. And it kind of changes.
They do a really good job, the movie so far, like they get them to this new setting, they quickly set up, the food's warm, oh, there's no telephone, so they can't contact anyone. Well, how close is the nearest town? They set all that up in like no time, so you're not like questioning any of this yourself. You're able to go, okay, we got that out of the way, now let's see how they survive this.
Did you find out anything, anything strike you suspicious about the food?
That it was hot?
No. So the soldier runs to the pot and he starts dishing himself some of the stew. And what does, do you remember what the girl says?
No, but now I'm curious what it is.
She goes, you can't just help yourself. Like, she doesn't want him to eat it. And he's like, no, I'm going to eat it. And then he starts like scarfing it down and he makes the comment that, oh, it tastes like, they go like, what is it? And he goes, it must be pork. It tastes like pork. And you cut to like a shot of That's her funny. And she's like wincing kind of.
Yeah.
That was human flesh in there.
Yeah. That's and special forces pork.
Yeah. She didn't want him to eat it. And
yeah, I totally missed all of that. That's funny.
And I only knew it from the I read some trivia about it. So yeah, so there's that little bit of business. But again, that happened so fast. Like I wouldn't expect you to have caught that. But yeah, they put Wells up in bed. They're gonna kind of do an operation. They're kind of do some amateur surgery,
yeah,
on him with crazy glue or super glue. I don't know if it's true or not, but they're gonna kind of try and permanently, no, not permanently, but in a little more solid way, kind of sew him up.
And yeah, they bring up because I think the dog that was in the house started,
oh my God,
chewing on the bandages.
That scene when the dog is like pulling on him, like I was like, oh, see, that's a great little, like, had a werewolf like run in and rip somebody's head off, you would have been like, okay. But having that dog, that friendly dog. Now, you thought it was I thought it was his actual intestine the dog was pulling on.
Well, I mean, I think probably how quickly they had to get out of there. It's
like, it was like, it was all like
intertwined.
It was like flesh.
Yeah.
But
it was all intertwined.
It's interesting. Like having a small thing, like, it's not small, but having a, like a little, like, cause you can, a good example is like, you know, like, again, like you see somebody like, oh, they got their head chopped off by a sword. You go like, oh, okay. But if they show a close up of somebody like sticking a needle in their skin or getting it in, you know, you go like, ooh, you like recoil. And it's, yeah, because you can't relate to getting your head chopped off, but you can relate to getting poked by a needle. Or, you know, if you got like a piece of glass stuck under your skin or something like that, that is much more kind of anxiety inducing than like hacking off a limb or a major wound that you see. You have no frame of reference for that in a movie, mm-hmm, but you do these little things. And I think that was a good example of that. So again, I think that was kind of a good use of their budget, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So they're holed up in this place. They get ready for, and the werewolves are circling, right? They tracked them down. They're circling the house. We got some werewolf vision, right? Some kind of, not, it's not infrared, it's just like black and white.
Yeah.
The werewolves are circling. And it's like, again, we kind of go back to like the military tactics. Like, you know, they kind of set up a patrol, or they set up a watch. You know, like two guys watch, everybody else tries to get rest. And then the werewolves they're like probing, you know, like they kind of do these little attacks. And then we learn more about the antagonist, right? What's the first, one of the first things that we notice is this Cooper who they found, the special forces guy who had this horrible wound, was near death. Starting,
yeah,
to
he shows them that he's starting to heal.
Starting to heal. Yep. And then we know, like, okay. And then I think that's when they start to really come to terms with like what they're dealing with. And I what did you think of the, once they got into the cottage, what did you like, did you like that? I mean, did you think that was a good choice? Would you rather have seen them run around in the wood, you know, like kind of via predator, or did you the standoff dynamic?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably you, in that situation, you'd go for the first thing that looks safe, and what's more safe than like what looks like a home?
Yeah.
You know, so it made sense, and they did their thing of, you know, looking for anything that could be used as a weapon. They find a sword and an axe and a electrical carving knife.
Yeah.
that was pretty funny. You know, I mean, it made sense to me. I guess hindsight is 2020.
Yeah.
You could keep on the road, but you don't know who this person is that picked you up. You're just thankful that they were there and could get you somewhere that looks like safety.
And they don't try and like establish like, oh, there's like sparks flying between. They're not flirting or anything like that. There's not like sparks flying between the young woman that picks them up. What's her name? Megan. You know, it's not like, but it's kind of like again, like Aliens. It's kind of like a Hicks Ripley relationship. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, like, yeah, we have the whole standoff situation, and it does kind of become, that's another genre of horror thriller, is the home invasion genre. And again, like, that's why we have haunted house movies. It's like the place you're supposed to be the most safe is in your home. And if something's trying to come in and invade your home, you're not safe anywhere.
Looking at the story as a whole, you're kind of, the viewer is kind of in the same boat as the soldiers, because you're having these questions and getting these bits of information throughout from Megan as the story goes. You know, the generator shuts off and she brings up they can see in the dark. And
again, another Aliens reference.
Yeah.
When they cut the power. And what tactically, the werewolves do something. What do they do? Do you remember?
There's a couple of things, but I don't know what you might be. I mean, I know they try to, like you're saying, they're probing. I think one of them goes up to the second story and tries to attack the Sarge.
Yeah. But they destroy the car.
That's right. Yes. Yeah.
They tear up their car so that now they can't escape. But this is another thing that another thing I like about this movie is they have a plan, right? Like Cooper kind of devises a plan. Megan has another car. It's not running, but she's got another one in the barn. And they kind of devise a plan to, you know, get to the car, get out of there. Which I appreciate. Like, you know, your plan might not be very good, you know, like, you know, it might be a ill-conceived plan, but at least it's a plan. And I think that's important. Like, that's important to have, because you don't want to have just people running around. Like, you know, some of these kind of the really bad slasher movies, it's just people running around getting killed. It's like, I would not do that. Like, you have some kind of plan. It might be, you know, a 1,000-to-1 shot, but you want to give it a try.
Yeah. Those are sometimes that's the only odds that might be in your favor.
Right.
the long shot. Yeah.
And again, that's, I think, what adds to the charisma of Cooper is he's like, okay, like let's come up with a plan. Yeah. And I think that's why they want him for the special forces, is he's got a lot of leadership.
Yeah.
Capabilities. When their leader goes down, he steps in. And along with God, who was the villain again?
Ryan.
Ryan.
Yeah.
So along with Ryan healing, so does Wells, their sergeant.
Yeah.
And then now it's like we're full on werewolf. And they hatch this plan, right?
They're getting low on ammo because they keep using it on the things. I think at one point,
yeah.
I wrote this down because it was just like my stream of consciousness. But at one point, she sits down and plays a song on the piano. And the first thing I thought of was, that's from the fountain scene in Ocean's 11.
Was it?
Yeah. I don't know. That means nothing to anything.
Music.
The Sarge is healing upstairs, and so he kind of comes to terms with what's happening to him too.
Yeah. Well, and again that's a little bit of like the fact that they are running low on ammo, and I think they mentioned like they don't have they have flashbang grenades. You know, they maybe have like 50 or so rounds per weapon.
Yeah, they do. And again, they do a good job of like just dropping in, like, this is what we have left. And this is like, it's 6 hours to sunrise, or it's, you know, there's a glance at a clock that kind of tells you where, because it's easy to get like lost in it when it's all happening at night. Everything is dark and you don't know where things stand. So it does a good job of like dropping these breadcrumbs that tell you where it's at.
Yeah. And they try and execute their plan B, and that completely fails. It doesn't work. Their second car, I think they get it. Don't they get it? They get it started. They hotwire it. Oh, the guy that goes into hotwire it. It's exactly, again, it's another scene taken straight. It's another homage to Aliens. The guy starts the car. Do you remember in Aliens when the pilot gets in the drop ship to pick him up, and she gets in the pilot seat and starts up the ship, and then all of a sudden behind her, she hears the hiss of the alien, and then she turns around and it's just a blood splatter. Exact same scene happens here.
He gets a little further probably because he turns the headlights on and sees one of them feasting on another soldier.
Yeah.
And then he backs up the Land Rover to the front door of the house. And that's kind of when he realizes, oh, it got on the roof and crawled inside. And then
he goes, you're behind me, aren't you? Yeah, that's lifted straight from Aliens. And then there was some dialogue too, like when one of the things Hicks tells the Marines and Aliens is like, I want nothing but, you know, short, like, watch your shots, short controlled bursts. And that exact same dialogue, I think Cooper tells the other soldiers. So yeah.
Yeah.
And then, so that plan falls apart, and then it's just werewolf mayhem inside the house. Right.
Yeah. You've got Ryan is now a werewolf, and I think he gets punched and jumps out a window. So he joins the outside posse.
Yes.
but there's Sarge is healing and kind of and suggesting like, look, maybe I can help, you know, turn and hold them off. He says a kind of a line that like I thought was I don't know, interesting, because like, and you don't always hear it from like in any movie that deals with the military, but he says, you know, as suggesting as leader, you know, sometimes the people you kill are your own men. And so it's certainly the case in this story. But yeah, mayhem breaks loose. I think one of the werewolves loses a fang.
Do you remember the soldier, not Cooper, not Wells, but the last guy before he gets killed, what he says to the werewolf? Like, he knows he's going to die.
No, was he the guy in the car?
No, not the guy in the car. Spoon? Yeah, Spoon.
Spoon. Yeah, no, I don't remember what he says.
He says he's about to get eaten. He goes, I hope I give you the shits, you wimp.
I thought that
was pretty good.
Line.
I thought that was pretty good. And then they do a couple of dog jokes too along the way, which I thought was great. I thought that was pretty good. Yeah, they had some good dog jokes in there. So this is part that, I mean, again, I really like this movie, but this is the part that I was a little bit unclear on, and maybe you can, I'd be curious to hear what you think about it. So they're kind of screwed, and their werewolves are kind of circling the house. And then we get the revelation that Megan is not who she said she was. In fact, mm-hmm. all along, Megan was a werewolf. And there was really, they didn't really have a chance. She says something to Cooper. She says,
it's that time of the month?
No, not that. She said, she says, like, you know, I didn't want, like, I don't, you were my way out. Or, like, you know, I thought you were my way out. I don't want to be part of this effed up family. But now it's not going to work. Was she hoping that they would kill the other werewolves? I had the quote.
The way the movie goes, I would be surprised. I would think maybe she wanted to get rid of the other werewolves and because like maybe she was the odd werewolf out, you know, she was the one who took the photograph, was the one out with the car, like not there chasing after them, you know, earlier in the movie, she was the one that was out and had the car to drive up with it. So maybe, but that's, you know, I could be reading too much into it.
Well, and then like, was her story about being a scientist true? And then did she get bit and then become a werewolf? Because this is the exact line from the movie. I'm sorry, when I found you out there, I truly believed you were the best chance I had of getting out. But now I have no chance. There is no out there. There never was. I came here to be what one with nature. I got what I wanted. Now I have to live with it. And then he says, like, oh, there's no house in the next glen. Because I think she tells him, like, oh, there's a house in the next glen. We could get to it.
Yeah.
And then I don't,
because at first she was just zoologist or she was studying animals, and then it was I was a second to the special ops team.
Yeah.
And so I mean it could be the case that like that it was true and she, you know, just ended up as everyone else in the unit became
embroiled in it.
But I don't know, I guess during the watch I was just kind of not like really reading into it much more.
Well, I think what you're saying is more like, yeah, she did come there as a scientist and just got wrapped up in it, and I was like, this is crazy, I want out.
Yeah,
you know, she wasn't exactly like born and raised with the werewolves.
And it could be that she was maybe the odd person out, because like it's not an uncommon thing in movies where like the non-soldier or that's in with the team is kind of kept at arm's length.
Yeah. And then they just, it's funny. Like that, I thought was another funny thing was, she goes in this long, like she starts to transform, right? And she goes in this long speech, you know, well, not long speech, but she says all this stuff. The guy just shoots her. I think Spoon just shoots her in the head. She goes down, and then you know, yeah, they start their kind of final fight with the werewolves.
Yeah,
but
they start up with Sarge and kind of just get. You go lower and lower in the building until they're in like a basement area.
Yeah. And aren't there bodies in the basement?
Yes.
Yeah. That's where the stew meat came from.
Yeah. And they come across, isn't the last thing he uses is like the silver letter opener from the beginning of the movie.
Yes. A callback. Yeah. That's what a great, because they make a big deal.
It's full circle, like a full moon.
Well, yeah. I mean, they make a big deal about the silver letter opener. And and it's one of those things where like, they make, like, why are they, you know, this must be important later on. And it is. Yeah, but again, this is, like a, I mean, we get, again, like aliens, we've got a military force thinking they're going to take this creature or creatures and use them for military purposes, right? I mean, I get the sense that that's the whole, that was the whole goal of Ryan, was to capture a werewolf and then, you know, study it, use it, you know, maybe turn, make, create an army of wolf soldiers. You know, that is a, again, that's another, something that is in heavily implied in Aliens, that they want to take, they want to take something back, a creature, a dangerous creature back, and study it and then use it for military purposes.
Yeah.
Which is a really cool idea. You know, I don't know, have you ever, are you familiar with Richard Matheson? He wrote I Am Legend. And he did the book, it's a collection of short stories that had I Am Legend in it. But one of the short stories was a short story called Witch War, which I think is so awesome. And how this has not been turned into a movie, I have no idea. But Witch War,
I've never heard of it.
It's, you should check it out. It's you should read it. It's a short story about the I don't know if it's like the British or the US military in World War II. They're using a coven of witches in war. And like this little scene that they play out in the short story, like there's a German patrol coming through, and the intelligence officer like goes into this room with a report. It hands it, and there's just like these ladies, just, I think, you know, they're just kind of just hanging out in this room, and they read the report, and they're like, "Are there any vehicles?" And they're like, "No." And you're like, "What the heck is going on?" And they all join in a circle, and they start doing incantations, and then it cuts back to this German patrol, and like boulders fall from the sky. Lions come and like take out these soldiers. And I always thought,
that sounds
like,
amazing.
I thought that would be a dope movie. Like that would be so cool. I don't know if like they've just never had they couldn't get the rights to it. But I mean, like that idea, they've done zombies in World War II movies. And, you know, like recently, I think there was that JJ Abrams movie that they did.
Yeah. They've done probably everything. I mean, there's a whole video game called Wolfenstein, right? that's got to be.
Yeah.
So
that's almost a genre unto itself.
Yeah. Well, I've got $25. Let's see what we can
buy the rights to Witch War.
Yeah.
Oh, we just rewrite it and just change enough stuff so legally we can't get sued.
Yeah. Werewar.
Werewar. And that's another. Like, I think you could definitely expand on this. Like, you could. You could do a sequel to Dog Soldiers, totally.
Oh yeah,
but
yeah, there's no way they got rid of them all. I love the ending. I love the very ending of the movie. Like I mean, I guess your mileage may vary. It was a great movie. I loved watching it, but it was like the perfect cap was the newspaper.
Oh yeah, that had, yeah.
Werewolves Ate My Platoon, and it's eclipsed by the England versus Germany football score.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Yeah, I really like this movie. Again, I you know, it was definitely low budget, but they maximized what they had, and I think made a really good product. I think it's a great example for aspiring filmmakers to watch and see how you can kind of stretch a buck. But again, like, I think had you not had a charismatic lead and Kevin McKidd as Cooper, you know, I think the whole thing could have kind of fallen apart. So yeah, I mean, all the pieces come together, and I think I read in the trivia that he hurt he broke a rib. And they were going to replace him. And he was trying to hide the fact that he was injured through most of the production.
Which, wow.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of an interesting story. But yeah, I mean, you get good actors. And they kind of play it straight. You know, there is a little bit of like kind of a wink and a nod. Just a little bit. Just enough. You know, they're not like, oh, this is ridiculous. It's just enough to be fun, but not to kind of take you out of the movie.
Yeah, I agree.
Would you recommend Dog Soldiers to a friend?
Oh yeah, yeah. It was great. I liked watching it.
I would too. I would too. Again, like it's one of those things. Like, had you heard about Dog Soldiers before I mentioned it to you?
No. I mean, it's possible. Like, I was super like into following movie news at the time that it came out, so it's possible like I had seen the title, but I'm pretty sure
Ain't It Cool might have done some coverage of it.
Yeah. I never watched it before. It kind of came out at the time. You know what reminded me of is like, and I guess it would have came out at the same time or that like window of years where like digital filming kind of was starting. Mm-hmm. And because it looked like it, I don't know, maybe it wasn't filmed digitally, but it looked like
early
it,
digital.
It was. And it had like the super like grainy look to it. Yeah. Like, it's been a while since I watched it, but it's how I remember seeing Collateral.
Yeah.
Initially, it's like, holy crap, this is supposed to be digital. I could be wrong, but that's just like what my brain was thinking.
Well, I can almost guarantee you that the graininess came from with like early digital. If you filmed in low light, it was hella grainy. Like, it was,
well, that would make sense why it looks like Collateral. Cause that was, I think, all night.
At night. Yeah. It was way grainy. But yes, like again, like, what could be a limitation is actually a positive, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah. No, it didn't take away from it at all.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it goes to show that like a fun story is a fun story, no matter like what kind of tools you have. It could have been, you know, animated in crayon, and it would have been just as fun to watch.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was just one of those kind of lightning in a bottle things. You had a up and coming director that's got a great sense of visual flair. You had some good actors. And again, I don't think it can't be emphasized enough. Like, they probably did not have a lot of money to spend on the werewolf suits. If you were to see the werewolf suits in a bright room, you'd probably be like, this looks like crap. But the fact that they did these quick cuts in darkness, a lot of shadows, you know, your brain fills in the rest, and the creature looks way better like that than it would just, you know, if we were to CG something or, you know, show it a lot. I also read that, you know, when you have a creature, like when you have like a big wolf costume, you could do one of two things. You could hire a great big tall stunt guy to be in the wolf costume. The director didn't want that. He didn't want it to move like that. So what he did was hire professional dancers and put them on stilts. So they wanted the werewolves to, like, you know, when you see like a wolf, or like, I notice it with like my cat, and she's like jumping, she runs down the stairs, jumps onto the table, onto the counter. It's all like one fluid movement. And that's what the director wanted for the movement of the werewolves, was this kind of fluid, you know, fast movement. And, I'll say this. I didn't really notice, because they do not linger on shots of the werewolves. You don't see the werewolves move a lot. I don't think you ever see a full body shot of a werewolf, like a werewolf walking. I think that the whole movie, you just see parts of one. I don't know that you ever see a complete werewolf like going and walking across the room. Yeah. But it's a good idea.
Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, maybe. Well, yeah. I think you're right, because probably the most clearest you see it is when the headlights turn on in the barn. And even that's not, I mean, it's not up and moving. Then you probably see quite a bit in the kitchen when things are going haywire, but moving it, I don't think.
Well, I mean, they just do a lot of shots of just the claws coming through the windows, right? They don't even show the suits a lot. Yeah, it's really. Yeah. I mean, again, I think that's. I mean, it would not surprise me if he got that idea from James Cameron in Aliens. Like Aliens, you've seen Aliens, right?
Yeah, I
have. Oh, Ryan, in fact, I'm waiting for you to say, if you said no, I'd be like, bro, we're doing Aliens next.
Well, what's funny is like, I probably should have seen it more recently. I was probably a kid when last time I saw it. And in fact, I think I probably saw Aliens before I saw the original Alien.
I think I did too.
But it was not until Alien 3 that would be the first one I saw in theaters.
Yeah. But I mean, like, I think like for Aliens again, like they had like three alien suits, but in the movie, it looks like there's hundreds of them. And, you could tell that, Marshall was inspired by Cameron for sure. And that's a good thing.
It's good. Yeah. It's good. It's a good creative. I mean, not, I don't know how he is as a person, but like as a creative individual, you could do worse than be inspired by him.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, Ryan, that is Dog Soldiers. Again, I it's kind of, look, those, the other two movies we did, they had a certain charm. But this was kind of a palate cleanser. This was a movie that, it's good to talk about movies that I would actually recommend to people.
I'll never shake the fact that like to some degree they've all got their charm and there's worth something worth talking about all of them, I agree.
Well, you could definitely learn something from each one, especially again if any aspiring filmmakers out there. Yeah.
And now two references in a row to Doomsday. I got to go back and watch that.
I could have sworn we went to go see Doomsday. It was you and me, but maybe it was somebody else.
Listen, like I go to the movies by myself a lot, but I've also gone to see a lot of movies with my brother. I don't know how many times I've turned to him and asked, like, did I go see this with you? And I'm told, yeah, dummy, I was sitting right next to you.
Maybe I saw it with your brother.
I don't recall seeing it in theaters, but I mean, odds are that I saw it with you were pretty good at some point.
Well, look, I'm going to see you in person in a few days, so maybe we'll go see a movie and it could be, we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
Just like the old days.
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right. Well, there it is, folks. Dog Soldiers is right now, anyways. It's streaming on Amazon Prime for free if you're an Amazon Prime member. But it's available just about anywhere. I think I have it on Blu-ray. I believe I have it on Blu-ray. But it's definitely worth checking out.
And I'm, forgive me for any ignorance, but I think Freevee is like Amazon's free Tubi-ish service, and it should be available through that too.
Oh, you know what, maybe that's what was it on. Yeah, okay, because I think when I watched when I watch it on Amazon Prime, it said Freevee.
I think anything that's on Freevee is probably also through available to Amazon Prime members.
Gotcha, guys, thank you for joining us. Until next time, for Discount Film Critics, I am Ray.
And I'm Ryan, not the Ryan from Dog Soldiers.
All right, guys. Have a great week. See you next time.